Let's make sure we get the script, bang it out. Hour. It's going to be an hour today. Hour max, I reckon. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I suppose we can, yeah.
Absolutely.
I
think it'll probably...
Jim, don't reckon.
Never going to happen, mate.
It's going to be difficult, but have you got a rush? Have you got to be somewhere?
No, not really, to be honest.
Back in and play some South Park, the fractured butthole.
It'd be weird having the end of year special as a shorter episode, wouldn't it?
Yeah, especially since the year has actually been wicked for sports. Yeah. Like, there's been a lot of sick things going on in sports this year. When I was doing the fight stuff month by month, especially for the UFC, I was like, we've been pretty lucky this year, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I think UFC especially has taken the ball by the horns, really, hasn't it? Do you know what I mean? In terms of like the interest, garnering the interest in that sport. They've had some crazy fights. But yeah, obviously, we're going to do a different format this week. As decided by you and Flynn, really, isn't it? Like, and I was sort of like, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, this is the way we're slowly working you out of the bubble chat. Yeah, I remember we had that groundbreaking idea, and then Bissett, you didn't contribute nothing to that, man. So yeah, this is the beginning of the end for you, mate. Sorry about that.
And we had the groundbreaking idea of doing a best of
at the end of a year. Yeah, absolute pioneers we are, man.
And unfortunately, Finn, you're not with us this week because you've got the old Omicron, haven't you?
I've got the old Omicron. Well, I've tested positive for COVID. I don't know if it's the original variant or if it's Omicron, but it's been pretty rough, but I'm starting to feel a bit better now.
Omicron with a vengeance. Screwing, mate. And it's provoked some quasi-scientific debates in our group chats, which have been some of the funniest things I read in the afternoon.
Oh, so. It's been amazing.
The duck emoji that's gone into the group title is making me crazy.
But before we start, it's both of you, like, obviously I hope you had a great Christmas, and I hope it's going to be a good new year.
I had a wicked Christmas, man. Thank you for asking. Was yours all right?
Ooh, yeah, sound. What are you doing for New Year's Eve?
Absolutely nothing. I'm going to sit in. I was meant to go to London, but because of certain scares regarding certain viruses, and because it just wasn't really shaping up in the most convenient way, we decided to cancel that, and I'm back to doing what I usually do on New Year's, which is sod all,
I'm kind of like looking forward to it in a way, you know what I mean? I never really do anything for New Year's anyway. It's not really something I like to do, go out on New Year's with, like, you know, and spend like an hour waiting for a drink and like pack full of people, and like all the papers are like saying that all the Scots are gonna land on the UK, like, you know what I mean? Like, what was the picture of it? Was like Braveheart or something on the sun. It was like 10,000 Scots are coming to the UK, going to land in your pubs.
Hadrian's Wall is crumbling.
So yeah, don't sound fun, and I can't afford to get the old virus again. So
you're vaxxed up, ain't you, mate? You should be all right.
Yeah, but I can't test positive for it, innit?
Oh, I don't know.
Before my flight. Do you know what I mean?
Backed me up. Send me to jail.
Right, so we're going to start off with the format. We're going to run through the year of 2021, all the big sporting events. Have a little recap if we can remember all of the stuff that's happened this year, which is we're definitely not going to.
Unlikely, yeah.
But we'll do our best and sort of go over our first year as the Bull Chat Sports podcast. So what a great year it's been. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been pretty sick. And typing up the Super Bowl result earlier made me realise just how long we've been doing it. What is it, this the 46th episode or something? And I was like, that was nearly a year ago. I was like, it doesn't seem to have been that long. Also, trying to get a feel for it, feeling more comfortable, trying to push the format forward in certain respects, bringing Flynn on board as a more permanent member and bringing guests on. It's the change and the evolution of the pod. I'm quite proud of us, lads, to be honest.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that you start doing and you think, right, it sounds like an amazing idea. Like, you have a chat about it one night, and then, you know, usually you probably don't speak to each other about it the next morning. And we didn't really, but we just said, like, look, should we just do it? We were talking about it, you know, over Christmas last year, just before Christmas. And we were like, let's get it done the new year. And then a couple of weeks later, we actually started doing it, which was, it was handy that we were both there doing it to start off.
Yeah.
Because I think otherwise it would have been difficult to make that transition back to New York. And like when we were doing it sort of like virtually. But luckily it's managed to stand the test of time. And now we know the sort of like format, we've got the structure down, and we've got some sort of like dedicated listeners. That really helped. And obviously, Flynn was a big part of that as well, because you were one of our early listeners, mate. So you definitely kept us. Yeah. you kept us kind of like, you know, going, really. Do you know what I mean? With your feedback. So yeah, big credit to Flynn.
Yeah, he did every week. It was like, yeah, guys, just been cooking and listening to it. That bit was good. And it was like 99%. It was more encouragement than feedback. And that was important in the early stages for us. So I appreciate that, Flynn, a lot. But yeah, shall we stop sucking each other off now?
And, probably.
Mate, you can carry on for a bit.
just for a little touch me now.
Did the old have Marilyn Manson? A start off in January, it makes sense, doesn't it? So there was a big fight in the UFC, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was Conor McGregor's return to top-level competition in the UFC. And this was nice, Conor. He showed up with a pretty much like a solicitor's pinstripe suit. He had his glasses on. He wouldn't talk shit before the fight. He even held Dustin Poirier's hot sauce for him. He promised to make a donation to Dustin Poirier's charitable organization, all of which became this big bone of contention in the build-up to their third fight later on in the year. And it was this guy, like, okay, is the notorious one, the guy who was throwing trolleys into windows, the guy who was being very provocative towards Khabib regarding race and religion, etc. Is this guy, after all the wealth and fame he's amassed, is he finally turned a corner in his personality? And for a minute there, it looked like that was the case. And going up into the cage, he was a different fighter from the one we'd seen. Very boxing heavy. Allegedly, he was preparing for another one of those mega boxing fights with Manny Pacquiao. And you've seen the difference in the cage against Poirier. Very heavy on the front leg, almost exclusively throwing punches, struggling to deal with Poirier's low calf kicks. And then ultimately, after landing a big left hand, Poirier just made his lead leg go numb by constantly kicking it. And then he finished him with like a 20-punch combination. Shocking stuff. And the precursor to a massive trilogy fight later in the year.
And then this was the fight where he had a bit of a spat with him, like at the end, wasn't it? Wasn't this one where he was saying something about?
No, that was the third one.
There you go. That's how disjointed with the fights.
But even after the third one, even after the fight, there was footage of him limping through backstage, suit back on, like hugging Poirier, saying, "Listen, that was a really good fight. We'll do that again." Shaking his hand. And I was in a good place as to my fan to star relationship with Conor McGregor at that point, but things were going to change.
So I don't remember the fight so well, but I do remember that run up to it. I remember the super sound Conor McGregor, and I reckon he'd sobered up. What do you think?
I don't know if he's a sober guy. You know, just generally. But I think he might have been in
there. He seemed it there in that run-up. He's had that glow of and that happiness that a newly sober person has.
Wasn't this post his little scuffle in a New York bar with somebody? With like an old guy? I think that was like 2018. No, that might have been 2018. That might have been a lot earlier.
Yeah, when he punched the old man in Ireland, was it?
Yeah. No, I think there was one in New York as well, I think. I'm sure there was.
There was, he had a misdemeanor charge after throwing the trolley through the window.
Oh, was that it?
And he got locked up for that. It could have been a well-orchestrated public relations routine. I think we spoke before in appreciative terms about how much McGregor values the power that can be won and lost in the build-up to a fight. And I think we saw some art of war shit right there. It didn't work out successfully in his favour, but that was more, it came down to just Poirier not getting dragged into the nice guy act. I think he knew what was behind the mask. But Poirier had a big year up until the very end against Oliveira. But we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah. And the other big event in January was the PDC World Championship Final, which was won by Gerwyn Price. And he beat Gary Anderson to win his maiden title. This is a guy that used to play rugby. So he's had that good transition from one sport to the other. So fair play to him.
You wouldn't think rugby would translate that well to darts. But also, we've gone through a personal rejuvenation of darts in our personal lives recently. Big up to Stitch, was playing in his kitchen last Sunday, steaming. I was still hitting a few doubles. Let me work off that rust, son, and I'll be back in competitive form. I've got the tungstens out, mate. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't remember me being so good at it, to be honest. And that might be the first time I've chucked darts at a board in about 3 years, to be fair. It's something you do need to not be pissed for, isn't it, darts?
It helps.
Definitely helps. That hand-eye coordination, like... That's what I want. I just want one of those guys, like, wherever you play darts, just somebody to have a mic
shouting in your ear.
Yeah. Need it, mate.
In your ear, not your rear, by the way. Yeah, he's, I think, Stitch hit his first 180 the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buzzing, man. He's gonna be fucking playing next year, man. That's what we've got to look forward to.
I haven't hit one
Stitch in the finals of the PDC.
I'm gonna be his sparring partner. I'm just gonna be somebody beats up in the gym to work out his skills on, and then I'll be Larry Holmes in the 70s for Muhammad Ali. Sweet.
Go on, Stitch. All right, so move on to February. So obviously the main big event that I can think of, I can't think of any others, would be the Super Bowl. Yeah, the Chiefs versus the Bucs.
And the Buckaroo in good times. Yeah. I remember this being quite a shock because of the, obviously, Tom Brady going there after however many years with the Patriots. If I remember correctly, the Chiefs were maybe not landslide favourites, but pretty heavy favourites.
Heavy. I'd say probably like 2-7. I think they had a very good year. I can't remember what the record was, but I think it might have been like 12-4 or something like that. Yeah, and the Bucs had beaten the Green Bay Packers, I believe, in the championship game. If I can remember rightly. And obviously, yeah, Chiefs were a favourite, but you just can't deny Tom Brady, can you? Greatest athlete of all time.
Greatest student athlete of all time.
Yeah.
I remember, it's not just Mahomes, is it, for the Chiefs? They've got a few powerhouse players.
Yeah, Travis Kelce at tight end. They got Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill as wide receiver. And the defense was good that year. They've not been as good this year, and they're starting to fight. They did come unstuck a little bit, and so did Patrick Mahomes. He had a lot of turnovers at the start of the year, but now they're starting to get back to where they were in that Super Bowl game. But Tom Brady, obviously, him and Gronk, like, they're both at New England with the Patriots. They had a good connection there. I think they got two touchdowns in that Super Bowl. So it was just like watching a highlight reel of the past 15 years. when they're at New England Patriots, you know what I mean, with Bill Belichick, and for him to go there in his first season after he's done 19 years at New England, won six Super Bowls with them, to go there and win his seventh with a team that haven't won it since 2003. You're telling me that's not levels?
That is
sporting
levels.
Eliteness.
Amazing.
He's an absolute mind-blowing geezer. I just can't get my head over it. Get my head on it, rather.
Is there any chance the Buccaneers could have done that without him that year? Or do you reckon it's all down to him?
I would say minimal.
You had to put Bissett
on it. Had a good defence, didn't they? Had a good defence.
Very, very, yeah, had a very good defence. But I would say your likelihood's, probably 1/10 of, you know what I mean? Well, that's basically how much he brings to the table and how much he elevates a team. So I think, I certainly think that they wouldn't have had as much of a chance.
If you had to put them dodgy Bissett odds on it,
Dodgy Bissett odds. I probably would have made them 10-1 in the final with somebody. If it was someone running the mill, some average quarterback, you just don't really get very far, man. You have to have a good quarterback to get anywhere in that league.
Well, Bissett's not a bookie, he's a loan shark. You remember that, man?
I don't pay my bets out either, so Tino reckons. I should have put that down on the yearly highlights, man. Him calling me out. Saying All right, so what happened in March? I think it was just a big UFC fight, wasn't there?
Yeah, so Francis Ngannou gained the UFC heavyweight title in his rematch against Stipe Miocic. I think their first fight was in 2017. And 2017-2018, Ngannou was on this mad run, just cleaning people out with single punches, literal touch-of-death stuff. I remember he KO'd Alistair Overeem. He beat Cain Velasquez. And I think he was just on this red hot streak of, okay, this is the next guy. But Miocic was an established champion by then. And you're talking about Tom Brady levels. Miocic showed Ngannou levels in the wrestling department, in the conditioning department, and pretty much the bravery department, because he knew he was going to have to overcome this heavy early storm. He stuck to his guns, carried on dragging Francis Ngannou to the ground. He beat the fuck out of him for 25 minutes. It was quite impressive and difficult to watch on Ngannou's part, because you knew he was struggling in there and you knew he didn't have the tools to deal with the man in front of him. Fast forward to the rematch in March of this year. And I wouldn't say Ngannou was a different man, but he developed enough tools to waylay Miocic's approach. So Miocic would wait for Francis Ngannou to lead, and Ngannou wouldn't lead, which forced Miocic to go forward. And then that changed the striking rhythm that had given Miocic so much success in that first fight. And then Ngannou, crucially, really upped his takedown defence. And even at one point, took Miocic down and took his back. So you could see, I think Ngannou moved teams. He went to like Team Couture, Randy Couture, famous wrestler, light heavyweight champion in the UFC, and in Pride, I think, as well. So he'd made the smart decision to make the change, to make those significant improvements in his game. And once he unlocked that key, it was just, he forced Miocic to charge into him, and then he just cleaned his clock. I think it was in the second or the third round, bad knockout, and, you know, the rightful champion.
Second round at the 52nd second, I think it says, yeah.
Yeah, and he dropped him like a bad habit, and that was it, man. Miocic had, in between their first and second fights, Miocic had traded wins with Daniel Cormier in this great heavyweight trilogy, and, you know, a lot of miles had been put on the clock. In contrast, Ngannou, his awful decision loss to Derek Lewis aside, he just continued on what he was doing, just battering lads, and he didn't really take much abuse. So it did signal a change into the guard. I think Miocic sustained some eye injuries as well. And yeah, now Ngannou's the champ. Cyril Gane's the interim champ. You tell me how that happens when everyone's active. I have no clue. But I'm looking forward to that fight. That should be January next year or February next
year.
Just
one of the early highlights to kick off another, what will probably be a fantastic year with UFC, just like constantly putting out very, very entertaining cards and, you know, highlight real knockouts again, hopefully. Do you know what I mean?
And paying their fighters nothing, like, it's unreal.
Dana White, man, businessman of the year.
Speaking of payouts, on that night, there's a bit of trivia for you. The 50K bonus for fight of the night went to Vicente Luque and Tyron Woodley. Performance of the night went to Francis Ngannou and Sugar Sean O'Malley.
Oh, Sugar Sean.
Sugar Sean.
50K, that man. And I remember, who was it? There was a female fighter that, and she, somewhere in the middle of the year, she won the fight of the night bonus. And she was saying, like, after, like, I've paid this and that, and like all my fees have gone out for basically the camp and leading up to the fight, she was like, I'll be lucky, really, if I get enough to like go and, you know, once I've taken my team out for a meal. She was like, that'll be it, pretty much. She's like, literally, like, you know.
It's this very contentious issue. And I know there must be some truth to it because of how defensive Dana White gets every time it's brought up. Every time. And it makes me feel like this is a guy who's made his public relations image into this. Oh, I'm this guy's guy. I'm a chilling kind of dude. Ha, that's so funny. And you watch the moment someone crosses him and he turns into Cruella de Vil. Like, it's really like... I love watching it. It's this as a character study. The big bar led Dana White is killing it, man.
I've seen him defend it once or twice. Sometimes he gets really he always gets really defensive about it. But one time he gave an okay answer where he tried to explain that he's running an actual big business, not like boxing where they're just putting a night on. He's got hundreds of staff. He's got cooks. He's got everyone. So he kind of has to funnel a lot of the money back into the company. And then you hear some fighters say, look, we do get full medical care. We get a platform to then go and make our own money online and things like that. Yeah, I don't know where I sit on the fence with that. What do they usually get paid? Is it as bad as 10 grand a fight?
Is it 10 and 10 if you're like a preliminary fighter? This is what they say. Obviously, I've seen no documentation. I'm not a lawyer. And also, I don't know what price to put on a prize fight. I don't know what's fair. Yeah. I don't know how to assess someone's worth. It's just that when you hear 10 and 10, like 10 to show and 10 to fight, and then you take into account camp, and then you take into account taxes, and if you've got a car, if you're paying rent, that leaves you with not a lot. But also, this disturbing thing about that is you can't guarantee yourself a fight. So if you're guaranteed 10 and 10, 20 grand's a lot of money if you're fighting every 2 months. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Fighting twice a year, 40 grand for potentially getting your head kicked in doesn't sound like a great deal to me, man, to be honest.
But Flynn raised a good point there. Sorry to cut you. Is that the infrastructure of the UFC and a build up to a fight night card, the way they supply the fighters with meals and the way they let them use the performance center to cut their last few pounds, get proper medical advice on how to do that. And I think the support network in the UFC is a lot stronger than it would be in boxing. So you can see where a percentage of that money's gone. At the top level, even, if you look at the cards of, like, Israel Adesanya and Ngannou, et cetera, et cetera. If they make 600 grand, like, when they're, like, the star players, not Conor McGregor levels, but they're star athletes in the UFC, You know, mm-hmm. it seems to me that someone's getting fucked a little bit, especially since they cut their sponsorships and they have to take, is it Venom now? And they had to take Reebok before they could have personal sponsorships and they're not allowed to do
now
that
it's
now.
All Venom, yeah. Yeah. But I wonder why, what exacerbates Dana White's anger issues, man. I couldn't hazard a guess as to why he might be getting angry. But anyway, so March, that's where the Euro under 21 championships, they were in March until June, I believe. Okay. And it was the old AD Boothroyd impossible job, wasn't it? Remember that?
I literally can't remember anything about this. You're going to have to walk me through this.
Yeah, so they came with a team that you would expect really to get to the final with the group of players and the talent they had in that under 21 team.
Oh, I do remember this.
And and he flopped hard. Like, I think they lost 1-0 to Switzerland. And then they lost their second game to Portugal 2-0. And then they had to basically beat Croatia by 2 goals in the last group game. And it was basically a shootout. And Croatia scored in like the 93rd minute to make it 2-1 to England. So 2-0, England going through. Croatia scored very, very late on. And Croatia went through, and obviously England got knocked out in the group stages. And I think he literally coined himself the impossible job.
He's got like the best under 21 players in the world. He's like, how am I supposed to win with these lads?
Like Callum Hudson-Odoi and Jude Bellingham. He might have been. There was a few players that went to play with England that were eligible for U21s, but he still had a wealth of talent. Like, honestly, if we went through the squad. Yeah, he had an insane squad.
I do remember that at the time. Proper funny. The picture was him with his arms folded, just like, oh God, screw him. Yeah, sorry about it. You've got all the best players, mate. Must be pretty shit.
And we actually have an episode about that early on. I think it was called The Impossible Job as well. So if anybody wants to go and check that out and see like hear me absolutely ranting and raving about England, then yeah, feel free to go and check that out. April, another big. And to be fair, the UFC train was rolling all year.
Not making any stops whatsoever. This one was the rematch between Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal. And this, the build-up to their first fight was entrenched in all this talk about money. Jorge Masvidal wanted a load more dough than he was getting because of the pay-per-view buys, etc. Pay me what I'm worth. Came in as a late replacement, probably a week before the fight. Yeah, and basically got wrestled to death. So in the rematch, I think there was a lot of reasons for fans to believe that this is going to be different. Jorge Masvidal had a full camp. He looked in much better condition. And you could see during the fight that he was so concerned about the takedowns and so ready to wrestle that he didn't give Kamaru Usman
the respect he deserved.
Yeah, hands. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There were times when Masvidal would just use his head to try and evade punches and keep his arms and hands open by his hips so he could stuff the takedown. Now, I think Usman's the kind of wrestler that he's getting you down if he wants to take you down. But in that fight, he had no interest in it. The part of his game, his striking game, that's developed straight punches, high guard, good reflexes, defensively astute. And he ended up knocking out Jorge Masvidal with one of the best right hands I've ever seen.
Yeah, and one of the knockouts of the year.
Yeah, he reached forward with a left hook that wasn't a left hook. He was reaching palms open to pull down Jorge Masvidal's guard. And then straight as an arrow through his chin. The sweat goes everywhere. And Jorge Masvidal, I'll never forget this, when he hit the ground, he was still semi-conscious. But then when Usman got on top of him with the hammer fists, you could see him kind of like crunching his face up in effort, trying to hang on to the last bits of his consciousness. And then he was just like, he was gone. And I thought that was such a visceral, like hard to watch, but fascinating moment. Such a tough guy just being beaten into oblivion by a superior champion. Oh, God, it gives me goosebumps, man. Yeah. Amazing fight.
Yeah, Masvidal deserved getting knocked out, man. Like, as we're probably going to get to later in this year, he does over our Brummy boy, Leon Edwards. He can go fuck himself, Jorge.
Yeah, that's right. That's what happens, man.
And did you hear him shit-talk Birmingham?
Nah.
What are you shit-talking from? Mate. I dare.
Wow. He said he doesn't want to upset anyone, but he did.
Too late.
So he was doing an interview with Ariel Helwani after pulling out from the Leon Edwards fight. This happened later in the year. Ariel says, man, you don't know. I hear Birmingham's there, the mean streets, man. And he said, look, I don't want to upset anyone, but they don't even have fucking guns over there.
Upset anyone? They hadn't even got guns, man. Can't be that bad.
There's plenty of guns in Bromley, because it's plenty. The maddest thing. Like, where Flynn lives, where his dad lives at least, was right across the road from the jiu-jitsu gym he used to go to. And where Tino's brother used to live. And there were shootings every other week there, like, every other week. Proper horrible, like. So I imagine there's not nearly as many guns as there is in Miami. So, yeah, he's probably right. And we don't take offence, Jorge. But I want to see him fight Edwards, man.
I do. Fuck you, Jorge.
Right, and in the horse racing, Rachel Blackmore became the first female jockey to win the Grand National in its 182-year history aboard Manila Times. This was like a big part of history,
innit? Yeah. I mean, I remember it at the time, and she seemed like not really that overawed. I remember watching that thinking, like, I belong here kind of vibes.
Yeah.
And it's a rare forum to have intergender competition on this level, because obviously the horses are doing the running. And I was surprised at the time that she was the first one. Because I think that female jockeys, it probably suit them a bit more, really.
And I think she was in great form at Cheltenham as well. I think she had 5 or 6 winners at Cheltenham, I think, under trainer Henry de Bromhead. So, yeah, fair play to her. And it was kind of one of a few sort of defining moments in women's sport, really, this year, right? So.
And no abuse was attached to it either.
Unfortunately for Bryony Frost. And she was actually...
I'm glad you said for Bryony Frost, and not just unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. It wouldn't have had any context at all. Still in April, Hideki Matsuyama becomes the first Asian-born player to win the Masters.
I remember this one as well. He's like 23, 24.
Yeah, he's not very old. Yeah, mid-20s, I think. So that's a big, big moment for Japan, really, once again. A sport that, you know, golf is pretty big in Asia. And I think it's a very sort of popular sport for the everyday sort of like, you know, everyday people. That I think they quite like going down the range. I know that in Long Island, where I'm living, there's a lot of South Koreans. They're huge into it, like. So it's a sport that's becoming very, very big in Asia. And I think there's definitely going to be more, you know, Japanese, South Koreans and Chinese definitely sort of breaking through in the next sort of 2 or 3 years. So I think that's a big thing.
That's another surprising one, really. I would put like a precision game that takes stoicism and patience. I think that like the Japanese would have been all over it, innit? But it's not him. He wasn't born in Japan, was it?
I think he was the first.
He lives in America. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, obviously Colin Morikawa, who's one of the best golfers in the world at the minute. Yeah. He's Japanese descent, but I think he was born in California or something. Yeah. But he's the first, Asian-born player to win the Masters.
Fair play to him.
All right, May, big old Champions League final. Chelsea defeated Man City 1-0 after Pep strangely admitted Fernandinho. And this was the big talking point on the pod when we were going over it. Is he a tinker or an overthinker? I think that's the term we used.
Tinker or an overthinker. Not a prejudicial term for a traveller, by the way, a tinker. That's not the context in which we're using that.
Microaggression.
Microaggression. you were furious that he left out of Fernandinho.
Absolutely was.
Because he might be 30, 36, 35, something like that. But still... The way the game unfolded, it was that key area where Chelsea ended up like having unusual success, and it was because of this omission of Fernandinho.
And to be honest, I watched Fernandinho the other day, and he's still as good as he was 5 years ago, man. What he does on the field is like unbelievable. He's kind of like, he's got a mixture of sort of what Kante does on the field in terms of his industriousness, and he's got that sort of like little bit of a passing, like killer instinct with a pass as well, and he just reads the game so well. And for me, like he's literally, if you could have a definition of someone that you want to start in a Champions League final, it'd be him. It'd be a picture of him, man. Like what he does on the field, it was too good to leave out for Pep. So I think maybe he was trying to probably think past Tuchel's like tactical setup or whatever, you know, and fair play to Tuchel. He's come in there and he won a Champions League, and all right, they've had a little bit of dip in form last sort of like, you know, 3 or 4 games, but to go in there and do what he's done so far is pretty unbelievable, to be honest.
Do you still fancy Chelsea for the league this year or
not anymore? I think it's dead and done and dusted. I think it's got to go to Man City, and I think they're 8 points ahead going into the new year.
Yeah, they won 1-0 last night, didn't they?
It's just the gap's getting too big for me.
8 points ahead, but there's still about half of the season left, isn't there?
I know, but
it's not enough time.
That means Chelsea and Liverpool have to gain 8 points on Man City. Well, Liverpool have got a game in hand, but Chelsea have to gain at least 8 points. That's they have to win 3 more games than Man City in the back end of the season. For me, it's just in 18 games, it's just not realistic.
Unless they have
Man City will win at least 13 of their last 18 games.
If you had to put some biscuit odds on it, what would you put?
What, for Chelsea to win now?
No. For Chelsea to win now, yeah. To claw it back.
12-1, probably.
Decent.
Yeah. Well, Liverpool, probably you'd give maybe 4-1. 5-1 maybe, but Man City are going to be 1-4, 1-5. They're going to be like hot favourites.
What number can the listeners reach you on to place their bets?
7-5-6. Alternatively, 0121. Deb will be by the phone.
My secretary can answer at all times.
Yeah, I can't. Unless Liverpool focus on the league and just allow the Champions League, allow the Cups, and they don't get any injuries.
And unfortunately, they've got Mane and Salah going to the African Cup of Nations.
Oh, you once. You
won. Oh, Ian Wright once.
Oh, Ian Wright hurts. But yeah, May was also a massive month for fights. Charles Oliveira won the vacant lightweight title against Michael Chandler in an absolute dynamite fight.
That was unbelievable. Yeah. I do vividly remember that one, man. That was an absolute war, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Oliveira established that pattern of riding an early wave of flat-out aggression. I think Chandler dropped him in that first round as well. And yeah, he just got back on his Muay Thai stance and just waited for the opportunity to counterpunch and just dropped him with a perfect counter left hook, if I remember correctly. And I just remember thinking, Michael Chandler, it's such a shame he didn't get to the UFC earlier in his career, because even now he's like mid to late 30s, still in impeccable condition. And he savours the big event so much, man. He just wants to fight and put on a good show. It's a shame it didn't work out earlier. But even the residue of the prime Michael Chandler is still enough to give us so much entertainment. He's been a great addition to the roster. Also, Canelo Alvarez. He collected, I think it was his second super middleweight title by beating the previously undefeated Billy Joe Saunders from the UK. Just figured him out in the early rounds, let him make mistake after mistake, and then smashed his eye socket to pieces with an uppercut in front of like 70,000 fans. And he was baying them on like he was in the middle of the gladiatorial arena. He's the king, man. He is the absolute king. And Josh Taylor as well became the UK's first ever undisputed champion of the four belt era. Knocking down Jose Ramirez twice en route to a dominant display.
Disgrace.
He won on the scorecards. That was 114-112, unanimous, which means that if he didn't knock him down, Ramirez would have won the titles, which is absolutely despicable. And that shows you how good Josh Taylor is, man, to go to someone else's back guard and batter him enough when they can't even rob you. So that I want to see Josh Taylor against Terence Crawford at some point in the near future. That is the fight I want to see. Errol Spence, you never know what's going to happen with him with his eye. I think in Josh Taylor and Terence Crawford, you've got two alphas. They refuse to be beaten. They don't care about the big occasion. They just want to go in there and knock your head off. And the prospect of it after Josh Taylor hopefully beats Jack Carroll, that's the fight I want to see next. Yeah, and lastly, in the month, Naomi Osaka relinquishes her crown as the darling of tennis by refusing to do press conferences before the French Open. And we talked about this for a long time when it was happening, didn't we? And if my memory's correct, I remember thinking, yeah, she's fucked it now. Because the attraction of Naomi Osaka, biracial, good-looking girl, on the cover of magazines, this beacon of youth and beauty mixed with sporting potential and physicality. As soon as you turn on the press, if you're a major sports star, you're just going to get negativity just thrown at you all the time. And we've seen the results of that ever since. Have you heard anything about her since? Not really on the same level.
Well, the crown was taken by obviously our own Emma Raducanu, really, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? When she won that title in Flushing Meadows. But she was pretty... It's got to be called brave, man. She was brave to come out about it because you know, when you've got all that fame and you've got all that, all those endorsements and that sort of that potential of so much money, making so much money in your sport, not by just being good at your sport, but also by the things that you just alluded to. For her to come out and say, like, this is like really affecting me and I need to step away from a game, I need to do my own thing. I think, you know, I think fair fuck. So I think at the time, maybe I thought that she might have been milking it slightly and she should probably get her head back in the game and focus on being a sports person. But you have to remember she's so young as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's difficult for any young sports person to deal with all these things at the same time. So I think, you know, hopefully that she's feeling a lot better now. I think she has returned to competition. I think she didn't do so well on her return. Maybe, obviously, that's relatively normal, but let's hope she gets back up to the point where she's competing at the high levels again.
What was the reason for her withdrawing? Was it the press? Was it
pressure from mental health issues? Yeah, and that was kind of like
theme of the year,
really. One of the big themes of the year was sort of mental health in sports, really. So I think that was definitely a big part.
But I'd much rather live in a world where people have the opportunity to say, look, I actually feel a bit fucked here mentally. I'm not going to do this. Even though I would have certain opinions, especially with the Simone Biles thing later on in the year. And I'm thinking, is this just something you're coming out with because you've, like, to use the old school term, you've just bottled it, like, and that's fine. You know, the pressure, I can't even imagine the type of pressure these athletes are under. I literally have no conception of what they're going through. But I think it's quite a human reaction to, like, battle it sometimes, you know. Not everyone can be like Michael Jordan or whatever. And I think the mental health catch-all term has enabled a lot of people to justify things that beforehand or in past years, that there wasn't like a phrase that you could apply to it where people know what you're talking about. It could be anxiety, it could be depression, it could be all types of different things. You just don't feel okay. And I'm glad Naomi Osaka had the opportunity to do that. And, you know, on the other hand, I think the press, the nasty bastard they can be, they're still entitled to criticize her for not taking part in a usual thing.
I remember the press being especially brutal to her, and I'm just reading now that she was fined $15,000 for this decision. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, because that's part of your I think your contract in and your association with the ATP. Is it the ATP? Is that the Association of Tennis? I think part of your sort of agreement with them is that you do your media obligations. And I think that's quite different to the way it is in different sports. Like, you know, I don't think footballers and football managers, they're not obliged to come out and speak to the media. If they don't want to talk to the media, they don't have to. It's kind of like, that's just kind of part of the show. I don't think there's any contractual obligation. However, I think with the ATP, there is a contractual obligation for you to do your media work. Do you know what I mean? To come out and talk to the media. So I don't know that much about it, but for me, if that's true, then I think a fine is fair. Yeah, because she's breaking the contract.
Broke the rules.
Come on, company man. You know the score.
I know the score, mate. She knew the rules when she signed that. Yeah, she gets everything she deserves. Good.
Yeah. What's she trying to do? Achieve her dreams and feel okay.
But another few, I think Adam Peaty, I think he spoke about his struggles with mental health. Obviously, Olympic winning, gold winning butterfly swimmer? Butterfly?
Yeah, no, breaststroke.
Breaststroke.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the most like winningest swimmer in British history. Yeah.
And, I hate that word, by the way.
I know, I hate it as well. I hate it, but... Yeah. Sorry.
Feels
about
like
that.
It shouldn't be in the dictionary, but
I cut it out. Keep it in. The most winningest swimmer.
The winningest. Yeah. It feels like a problem Americanism for me.
Yeah. Yeah, the breaststroke. I hear he's been stroking a few breasts on Strictly as well, man. With his missus at home. Naughty, naughty.
Like you. There's only one thing to speak about in June, isn't there?
We still believe.
It's coming home. It's coming home.
How much did we piss off the world with that shit? Like, the whole world doesn't realise that we do that for every tournament. No matter how bad our team is, no matter what's going on, we sing it every single time. It just so happens that this year was the first year in God knows how many that we had an actual shot at winning it.
Yeah. But the seed for that song started, like, obviously a long time ago. That song's originally from, like, 1996, I think it was first sang by Badil and Skinner, Lightning Seeds. And then it was used in 1998. And then it kind of got phased out by 2002 because we had our own thing. Like, I think we was in Japan.
We're on the ball.
So, like, there was always, like, an England song for each tournament, wasn't it? But we got the old classics out. We got the old classic for, and in 2018, I remember I was wearing my England top and I was in New York. My dad had come over and we were going to watch in a pub, and I had like Americans just come up to me, and they were just like, "It's coming home, like it's coming home, man, it's coming home,
it's coming home, buddy,
it's coming home, buddy." But I think that sort of humor just gets lost on the Europeans quite clearly. They're just like, they don't see that we're being humorous about it, do they? Like they can't, they haven't got the same sense of humor.
But even speaking about it amongst ourselves, we were like tentatively booking, okay, what are we going to do this week? We're scheduling the pod. The lads are doing this. Yeah, if we do this on Wednesday, maybe we could watch the game on Thursday. And then it's like, oh, we're through the round of 16. Oh, we'll book that. We'll do that. Then we'll watch the quarterfinal. And then we got to the semis. And it was like,
it's like, that's not going to happen, though, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, probably, surely we're not going to get to the final. So let's just not worry about it, innit? We won't worry about where we're going to watch it, because we're not going to get there, innit? And it was like, oh, shit, we're actually there now.
We're actually there.
And then half the country went to Wembley.
Yeah.
And just caused an absolute ruckus. Like, people sticking things up their ass. Like, the videos were just insane. Like, we do not know how to handle ourselves in any sort of like elite competition in football. So
the stills from that day where it's Wembley, it literally looks like the scene from 28 Days Later, where there's like fences everywhere, flares going up, grown men, tits, red cross painted on their faces, like, we like, still believe.
People doing gear, like, yes. Literally just like everywhere.
Everywhere. No, hold me on. Boost me up. It was at once this fantastic occasion. I think predictably the people that were there in person let themselves down, but I don't blame them, because that is just, you know, a once in a lifetime thing. And I think the Italians did a Michael Jordan move, and that coming home, oh, it's coming home shit. I think they used that as motivation. So you are bringing shit home. We are going to play you off the park. But to be fair, England, I think they acquitted themselves well. Penalty, heartbreak right at the end. Again, sadly, predictably.
But then the onslaught of like media abuse that the black players that missed.
Mate, got. Not even media. The racial abuse for those lads was rough. Was it Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford?
Yeah.
And this Sterling didn't miss one, did he?
No, I think he might have scored his. Who was it? He came off the bench. Two lads came off the bench.
It was Sancho and Rashford.
Sancho and Rashford.
Came Saka.
Saka missed one. He
That's right.
But, you know, a strange decision for Southgate, I think, to bring two players off the bench that were, like, completely, completely cold, weren't warmed up.
Yeah.
I think that it's a cup final, for God's sake. Yeah, Jordan Henderson, that could have took a penalty. Yeah, Jack Grealish, that could have took a penalty. Two experienced players. All right, they're not out-and-out penalty takers, but they could have done it.
But you know that, again, the pressure of the final, the weight of however many penalty shootout heartbreaks we've had, you can't expect those lads to put that to the back of their mind. You know, we've got a different heritage when it comes to cup finals and penalties than the Italians do.
Yeah, you know, they're built for it, isn't it? Benucci and Chiellini. And
we got as close.
Tailor-made for it, innit?
We got as close as we could have got without winning it. And at the end of it all, once all the smoke's cleared, once all the lines have been snorted, I think you have to give the England lads a lot of credit, man. And I think this is something to push forward and build on in coming years, especially with the same group of players. I've got a lot of optimism for what they were able to do and what they could continue to be able to do.
Definitely.
It was the most fun I've ever had watching England play in my whole life. They were amazing. It was great to watch them this year.
And they only ever won, like, 1-0. Drew to Scotland, 0-0. But it was literally, like, part of the bus.
Yeah, they weren't thrilling performances, were they?
Except for against Germany. That was a good one.
Yeah, good game. Germany were poor, though.
Yeah, they weren't thrilling, poor. But they kept winning.
Yeah. It's like the Shaw and Sterling link-up on the left-hand side was absolutely outrageous.
Electric.
Harry Kane would score every game, miss 8 chances, and we'd be fuming. Like, absolutely. Like, get this fucker off. And then he'd manage to scramble the ball across the line again. Absolutely doing his job. But he's pissing me off so much about the whole thing, man. And Sterling getting no credit from the mainstream press.
Shock.
One of the best players on the team, hands down. And, you know, that was one of the few times where, like, I don't often buy into that, oh, this is purely a race issue. Except I really don't, because I think things are a lot more complicated than that. But I couldn't account for the amount of praise that Kane was getting and the complete lack of praise that Sterling was getting for anything other than race. And I'd say that hands down. Like, that was just the way it was. But, yeah, big up the boys in general. on the media. And yeah, and the same thing. This was last amongst it all. Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor had their trilogy fight, and nasty Conor was back. He was talking all that shit. He was cussing his missus. He was the whole stuff about the donation gone wrong, all this dirty laundry type shit. And then I remember after the weigh-ins and the ceremonial weigh-in began, that's where it's all lights and Conor McGregor's coming out. And I remember McGregor saying, "You're dead in the octagon tomorrow night." And I mean it. You're dead. And he was trying to emanate this energy of like maliciousness. And Poirier was similar to Khabib when they fought. And he's just like, "There's no fucking way you're beating me." He had his number. He knew he had him beat. And fair play to McGregor. He made adjustments to his game within the cage. He started throwing a lot of leg kicks, you know, and tried to not over-rely on his boxing. But again, Poirier had to ride the wave of an early left hand. He was checking leg kicks, but he just dragged him to the ground, like smashed him up against the cage and then punched him to death for pretty much the entirety of the first round. And then when they got back on their feet in the second, I remember there being this scenario where it was like a bit of a shootout. And I thought, oh, McGregor's got a chance in this situation here. And I think he threw one leg kick, went back, and then they exchanged left hands. And McGregor planted his rear foot, his left foot, and it just snapped. And he immediately fell, scooted to the cage. And then, you know, I think it was Herb Dean was the referee, rightly called it. But more fascinating than the result was McGregor's meltdown post-fight. He became like Mr. Hyde in that moment. He's like, one of the most awkward things I've seen is Joe Rogan sitting down, packed into his black suit like sausages, you know, his big head protruding out of the top. Conor, what do you think has just happened? The man's ankle, the bottom of his shin, is in two separate pieces right now. So I don't blame McGregor for acting a little bit out of character. But I don't think it was out of character. I think you got to the core of the being in that moment. And he's like, "Your wife's in my DMs, baby," and all this shit. And McBurry just come out. He's like, "Fuck you, man." He's like, "This is done." And and it was continuous and it went on for quite a long time. Poirier was like telling him to fuck off, but still being the bigger man. And McGregor was just like constantly going on and on and on. And if they left the microphone there, he would have carried on as well. It was fascinating human drama for sure, man.
A fair play to Poirier for beating him twice in 6 months. That takes a lot of doing, especially, you know, especially with McGregor coming back from a bit of a time off. I think, as we mentioned before, he's only won one fight in like the last for like 5 years now or something. Yeah. So he was coming back from those sort of like exhibition bouts as well, but still somebody that he needed to be wary of. Like, do you know what I mean? He definitely needs to be wary of McGregor.
No, absolutely. And I think that could account for Poirier's victory in the second fight. But then you've got 6 months straight of McGregor going, he's got full MMA training. He's not, you know, preparing for Manny Pacquiao in a fight that didn't eventually come off. He's got Poirier in mind. You could see in his approach, he was trying different things. He knew he needed different weapons, but Poirier had his number. He knew he could take the left hand, which is still one of the most dangerous punches in the sport. He knew he could take it. And I think, you know, after that, it was just a matter of time, really. Fascinating, fascinating stuff.
Well, so what happened in the Olympics? There was quite a lot going on in there. What were the sort of noteworthy moments?
What about you, Flynn? What can you remember from the Olympics? Did you watch much of it, actually? I remember speaking to you a little bit, but like...
Yeah, I did catching a few bits of the Olympics there. Off the top of my head, I remember Great Britain did really well, didn't we? Come yeah. third in the overall table.
Fourth, I think.
60 medals.
Fourth, I think.
Let's get the old medal table up.
Something that's not even in the script. Let's give a shout out to Galau Yafai, who won the boxing gold medal. Listen, he's straight like in the depths of Brum, like, do you know what I mean? Like Spark Brock, grew up with fuck all, got a gold medal in he went to Rio 2016. I think he was out in the second round. Plenty of reason to just allow it and just turn pro and knock over a few journeymen for a few years. No, he stuck at it, stayed in the amateur program. Stayed the extra year after COVID hit. Takes a lot of dedication to do that. And he won the gold with a really aggressive, like unusual amateur style, didn't he? Like going forward, hands to his head, depending on hooks and uppercuts and keeping his center of gravity low. And really impressive, man. I was really, really proud of him to be doing that.
And we spoke about the format of the boxing at the amateur level and especially in the Olympics. Like how difficult it is to win a fight, and especially if you lose that first round, you know you're playing catch up. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You know you've lost that first round. You've only got really two chances, and you have to win both of them, don't you? So it's a really short format, and quite really different to like completely different really in terms of the style.
I think that's where Galal had a lot of success. His sheer aggression often put him out front after the first round, and he scored quite a few knockdowns as well, which is another thing you don't often see. And then another one, Lauren Price, the middleweight female boxer, she absolutely swept it to gold as well. She dominated the field. So it'd be interesting to see what happens for her coming up.
I remember there was a big upset in the 100 metres with the Italy won the gold there, didn't they? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was a massive shock. I think that might be the first one they've ever won a medal, I think, in the...
No, the guy was American, though.
Yeah.
He went to like University of Houston.
Basically
like,
American, yeah.
And he couldn't even speak Italian, but... Yeah, that's not to, what's it called, undervalues.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's straight American gazer, like.
Yeah.
But the 100 metres was a bit of a weird one because there was the field, I don't want to call it weak because we had the Chinese runner, what's his name now? We were talking about him last week.
Yeah, can't
he was like the fastest over 60 metres. And he was one of the, I think the only Chinese guy ever to make it to the finals. So breaking new ground there.
Did he get bronze?
I think he finished fourth.
Yeah,
maybe just that. He might have got bronze. I can't remember. But yeah, it was strange. Bit of a weak field for me, but still exciting. It's still probably the most exciting event. One thing I was constantly on the group chat about when it was happening, and I don't know why I obsessed over this so much at the time, but I do remember when Dina Asher-Smith pulled up in her, was it the semi-final of the 100 meters?
Yeah, about citing that she had an injury that she's.
Well, she might have got to the final. We should really look this up, to be precise. I don't think it was in the final race, but yeah, she had an injury, and then she got on the microphone and she gave this like Oscar nominated speech about how like everyone wants to see her. I need to give an explanation. She's like waving at her face, trying to hold back tears, and this really, I found it quite self-indulgent. Like, listen, man, there's loads of athletes here. I know you've got a lot of endorsements. I know there's a lot of attention on you, but I thought that injury, I've got a lot of sympathy for her on one hand, because obviously the Olympic cycle is so sparse. If you miss your opportunity, you basically wait in another 4 years. In that intervening 4 years, you can easily lose your prime. You can easily pick up more injuries. I could sense the frustration in her, which I felt a bit of sympathy for. But I couldn't get past the self-indulgence. I really couldn't. But I spoke to you and you said you felt quite sorry for her. India said the same. And I did, that softened my stance on it a bit, but I'm pretty sure like she would just be, oh my God, poor me. I'm just going to put on a brave face for the cameras.
I think if you clipped 30 seconds out of the full 2 minute or whatever it was and showed somebody, they'd probably be sympathy. But if you watched it all, you can kind of see it's a little bit forced. I can see where you're coming from, Jimmy. Did kind of feel watching it back. I think if we watch it now, we'd probably be thinking, get over it. At the end of the day, everybody spends like 3.5 years like building up towards an Olympics. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it happens a lot. People get injuries and people can't even be there. The fact that you were there and you got to a semi-final, all right, maybe the injury did play a part in you not getting to the final, wherever it was. But at the end of the day, yeah, you have got to take it on the chin as an athlete, haven't you?
Yeah, and again, we might be asking a lot from, obviously, I'm sitting at home. I've rewound that interview and watched it all the way through like 3 or 4 times, just thinking, am I being a heartless bastard here? But the more I watched it, the more I was like, nope, I am fully like, I was doubling down. But again, I might have just made my mind up early and then just seeing the same things that were aggravating me time and time again. But I do honestly have a lot of sympathy for her, but I just thought like, just stop this, please now.
And the Simone Biles things, Flynn, did you see this? Where she supposedly had something which I didn't know exist. It's a bit like the yips in golf, which I don't think you'd really heard much of before I started talking to you about it.
I thought it was a racial slur when you first said it, man.
Very close to the yids. Very, very. But yeah, the yips, the Y-I-P-S. But Simone Biles, I think she called them the twisties. I could be wrong, but I think they were called the twisties. And it's apparently where you lose yourself in the air when you're doing like one of these like incredibly difficult maneuvers, like in the air, like 3 jump tuck twist with a Archie Gemmell, right? Well, whatever, they got some mad names. But I was fascinated. That is probably one of the things that captivated me the most about the Olympics.
Yeah,
was watching the gymnastics, man, and like these dudes on the rings, and they're just like the core strength that they must have, and then they're doing these like absolutely balmy twists in the air and stuff.
But we are men of culture, aren't we?
Absolutely, men of culture, man.
Yeah, we were.
One of the things that captivated me the most about the prior Olympics was seeing Simone Biles just come out of nowhere and destroy everything.
Yeah, she's been dining it off for like, well, why is she 26 now? And she's like,
since she was 21,
she's already been given like, I think she this year, last month or this month, she got given like the International Sports Person of the Year or something. She's won basically everything there is to win. Like, she would be a Hall of Famer now. She doesn't need to do anything else. And she's only like 26 or whatever. And she's had a hard upbringing as well. Do you know what I mean? I think her brother was in prison. I think he got shot or something. She's had like horrible family troubles in the past as well. But it's just kind of literally just evolving the whole mental health chat that basically encapsulated the year, didn't it?
She was also a victim of that one doctor on the US gymnastics team as well.
Bloody hell, what's his name? 130 victims. What was his name?
That's rough, man. Yeah. That is all fucking creepy hands.
In my eyes, she's a legend. She's an absolute amazing gymnast. And it was unreal to just see her just fail, like, and go through what she went through and get the twisties or however she put them.
In real time, the US gymnastics Twitter page or whatever.
Larry Nassar.
Yeah.
That was what his name was.
They put out several reasons. Right one after the other, didn't they? They had damage control for Simone Biles. Her refusal to go on was like, it's like everyone was panicking. Like, they couldn't give a proper reason straight away. And it could just be one of those under the spotlight. There's a lot of pressure here. Fuck this. I need to get out of here.
To be fair to her and to other sports people that are of that nature, but specifically her, she is literally expected to be flawless. There's not many sports people around the world that are expected to be absolutely flawless. There's some teams and individuals that are expected to win their competitions, but she's expected to not make mistakes. And like, for such a high profile sport, really, in America, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of expectation on it. Like, for her to come out and perform like the way she's performed like all her career, like, she's allowed to make mistakes, man. Honestly,
that's an important message, because those expectations, those unrealistic expectations, can fuck you up bad. And I think we saw, as you say, an example of that. And it is important to be able to fail, because that's how, if you're willing, how you learn and improve and come back stronger. And that's one of the tenets of sport overall, which is why sport can be such a positive influence in people's lives. But I think you're right. She was held to an impossible standard, which I hadn't really considered before. That's a good point, man.
And what about expectations from, like, from other areas? And Laura Hubbard, which is another name you put down there, she was expected, really, because of her transition from a man to a woman. There was an expectation from a lot of people, especially from the media. It was kind of like, she's basically a bloke up against women. She's going to dominate him. And she absolutely didn't. I don't think she made one lift. And she had no sort of real form going into it. I think she'd been in the sport for quite a few years, but she went to the Olympics, represented New Zealand. I think the first transgender athlete. There was another transgender athlete that played for Canada and won gold. They beat America 1-0 in the Olympics. She's just got one name. I think her name's Quinn, or their name's Quinn. So there was a couple this year. So another sort of like social aspect to it.
I expected Laura Hubbard to absolutely smash it. It's not that I was disappointed, but I thought this has made me reassess the transgender athlete thing. Like, especially in something like weightlifting, because you'd think your skeletal structure, your muscle composition, all that kind of stuff, even if your hormonal treatment lessens certain aspects of that, I would still expect it to be like, yeah, if you know how to do the lift, I would have expected her to do a lot better than she did. But she's up against a lot of young, strong female athletes. I think the girl from the UK in the same weight category got a silver, came out of nowhere. She did really well.
Yeah, that was impressive. Yeah.
We'd do really well to remember some names throughout this. But, you know what we're talking about if you watch the Olympics.
And I think the big old Chinese girl came in and smashed it. Yeah, smoked everybody. Like, smoked everyone with her first attempt. Her first attempt was better than everyone else's. It was like, I can't even hazard a guess of what it was. And then, like, she just came out and was just like, you know what? I'm just going to try twice what you've just done. And she was just like, yeah, I did it. I was like, fair play. But it shows you, like, elite level sports people, man. It doesn't matter, like, you know, if we're going up against, like, you know, females, but they're talking about elite sports people, man, to be honest. And there's a lot of technique involved. There's a lot of training. So, and it showed with Laura Hubbard, but, and she retired swiftly afterwards, I think. Yeah, because she's I think she's 41, isn't she, or something? She's
That's the other thing as well. Age played
a big part as well.
Did you guys see the big upset in the women's road race?
The cycling?
The cycling. That was one of my favourite points of the whole Olympics.
The Dutch woman, was it?
It was the Austrian woman. There's a Dutch woman involved. So this Austrian woman, who's never been a professional cyclist in her life, had no sponsorships or anything. She destroyed everyone. Now, why are you thinking of the Dutch woman's? Probably this. The Dutch rider, her name's Annemiek van Vleuten. So she crossed the finish line of the women's road race. She pumped her fists, celebrating the win. And only once she'd stopped and a team came up to her, she realised she'd been beaten 75 seconds earlier. That's how good this
devastated
amateur rider was. She smoked everyone so bad they didn't know she was ahead of them.
In a day job.
Yeah, I think she was like a professor or a scientist at some university. Like, she's got a day job. And she came to the Olympics and destroyed everyone.
She got access to the lab as well. She could be on those sneaky supplements as well, mate.
I was going to say, she evaded the testing afterward, did she? Went right under the radar.
I've developed a very simple but effective test to pump the most amount of EPO into my body without my blood thickening to dangerous levels.
But a big shout out to our Paralympians as well. They came in second in the medals table behind China. And 124 medals, of which 41 were gold. So big up the Paralympians.
Easy work.
So big fight in August, and then we'll be moving into September.
Yeah, sad one for me. Manny Pacquiao, one of the greatest fighters of all time and my personal favourite. He lost his WBA welterweight title to the late replacement, Yuridenis Ugas. Soundly defeated, soundly outboxed, outpointed. Pacquiao's been able to defy time and space and all that good stuff, but sheer athleticism, probably a lot of steads as well, no hate at all, but you know, he's just a fantastic fighter who's put in the hard yards over multiple decades. I think he's won more world championships in as many weight classes than any other fighter. He's been knocked out badly, came back, he's had one of the best four fight series against Juan Manuel Marquez, for Eric Morales, the list goes on and on and on. And also, his victory over Keith Thurman a year and a half earlier was like, okay, this guy, 40-odd years old,
can still do it.
Still got enough foot movement, still enough agility, enough hand speed. He can cut the angles. He's got a good enough chin. He wants the win. But yeah, Yuridenis Ugas, the bigger guy, great jab. Just kept it simple, kept it long. Caught Pacquiao coming in, and Pacquiao couldn't close the distance. And I heard someone else say this on, I think it was Steve Bunce on his podcast. I'm so glad it wasn't like him looking up at the ceiling lights, knocked out cold. He just got, not schooled, just soundly beaten. And I'm glad.
And he didn't deserve that, didn't he? He didn't deserve to be knocked out after a great career. But at least he can focus on his political career now.
Yeah, he can focus on rounding up the drug cartels and executing them at Riverside or something. So yeah, I'm glad. And, you know, all the best luck to him in retirement. Very sad one for me, though, to be honest.
Definitely. I do remember that sort of hitting you hard when we were talking about it. And then obviously two big moves in the sporting world. Obviously Messi with that heartfelt departure from Barcelona for PSG.
That was sad, wasn't it?
It was really sad, to be honest. And it was kind of like, I would have played for free, like, if they would have asked me to, kind of thing. And I do actually believe that. And obviously with the sort of the level of debt that Barcelona are in, even though they keep churning out money, they've just paid like 55 million for what's his name, Ferran Torres from Man City. But it is what it is, 1.5 million in debt, whatever they are. But want to build a new stadium. I don't know where they. I ain't got the answers. I ain't got all the answers. And the true GOAT returned to Manchester United. The prodigal son returns. So
great. I was so happy when he came back to United, just to see him all the time. And you can't honestly say that he's disappointed or not live up to expectations. He's been one of the few bright sparks in a continually spiraling United team, man.
I tell you what, though, he's been quiet since Rangnick's gone in there, hasn't he?
Cavani scored the other night. How many games has Rangnick been in charge?
Four.
And he hasn't scored?
I don't think so.
Oh, God, man.
Ranieri. They're not really scoring. He seems to be quite like frugal in his approach, quite pragmatic. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how he's fitting into that system. I haven't actually watched them since Ranieri's been the coach. I haven't really seen like how they've sort of changed style or anything like that, where they've changed tact. But I don't know. Maybe he's just doing a different. He's got a different role in that team. He's being a little bit more defensive. You know what I mean? He's perhaps been. I doubt it, but being less selfish,
yeah.
Which isn't really in his repertoire. But looks like at least Solskjaer was getting a good tune out of Ronaldo.
Well, there's one YouTube channel that I follow. I think it's Zlan TV, and he's a United fan. And the way he writes it, it just makes me crease every time. Like. He just says, oh, we were still dog shit tonight, but managed to scrap a little 1-1 draw with one of the worst teams in the world, like basically a top flight football. And it's just still not a lot of optimism. Gary Neville's calling Bruno Fernandes and Ronnie pair of whinge bags and that. It's like we were hailing Ranieri's arrival, but it hasn't exactly been the most exciting start, has it?
Nah. And what happened in September, obviously we'll reel through these because I'm conscious of time. Yeah. We were like, oh, we're going to make this an hour. But like, you know, we only got past the first half of this. But Ryder Cup.
Well, we got shown levels, didn't we? Europeans, absolutely. I don't know, how'd you say it?
And like, fairly so. We were never going to be able to match up with that like unbelievable cohort of golfers they have in the US at the minute. All the top players, bar Jon Rahm. Like I've in the they're in basically the top 10, and it, do you know what I mean?
John Rahm,
he's the only geezer, and he's Spanish. Don't even sound Spanish, does he?
Something's not right there, Flynn.
I think he lives in America as well. Sneaky.
It's in August as well, so September, US Open. Emma Raducanu claims the nation's heart. She comes in from what was she, 125th or something in the world?
Oh, she basically no one had ever heard of her, like literally, she was paying 25 quid. Like to get in a local tennis tournament earlier on in the year, just finished her like what A levels or whatever they were, and she's gone into Wimbledon, done incredibly there. I think she got to the quarters. Piers Morgan was like, I vividly remember Piers Morgan criticizing her because she had like stomach cramps or something, and she had to sort of withdraw from the match. And it was like getting on her back. Like no one had ever heard of her 2 months ago. She's got to the quarterfinals now. Everybody's talking about her. And you're criticising. I was like, man, just fucking get off the bandwagon. Stop like shouting at 18-year-old girls, man. But then she went to Flushing Meadows in New York and like absolutely smashed it, man. Smoked the competition. So
it helps that she's a pretty girl, isn't she? And she has like, she was so, she looked so comfortable on the microphone. And, you know, just this perfect, like all the sponsors must be like, oh my God.
Hey, look, the girl next door kind of thing. And she's got that attitude to it, and she can play as well. But it's going to be a tough test for her to try and keep that high level, you know, sort of intensity on the pitch and off the pitch. She's been, I think she has been touted to be the first billionaire sportswoman by, I don't know, predictive models.
Some hyperbolic journalist for the Huffington Post. But yeah, in the same month, Alexander Volkanovski, Brian Ortega, literally submission drama, bloodthirsty refereeing, another fantastic title occasion for the UFC.
I think that might be my fight of the year, man. I think that fight is the one for me. I remember watching that and just being like from the first bell to the end, like it was just incredible. Like,
and Ortega suffering a heavy defeat in a fight against 9 out of 10 fighters, he would have won twice. And again, the pinnacle of human drama. And not too long after, John Jones, who hasn't competed in nearly 2 years, was arrested and charged with alleged misdemeanor battery domestic violence after being inducted into the UFC's Hall of Fame for his fight with Alexander Gustafsson. This guy is...
And so recently, he was still top of the rankings. It's just like, he hasn't fought in ages. Like, how can he be in the rankings at all?
Well, Dana White... he just says, like, we can't bring this guy to Las Vegas. He's like, it's a problem. The way he drinks and the way he acts, we expect something to happen when we go to Las Vegas, which is mental. I suppose you're asking a bit much to ask a cage fighter to behave normally, but you don't have to punch up your missus and that. Do you know what I mean? On the Las Vegas Strip, you're better off just cheeking coppers and that. But remember, he got done
Don't ask Flynn about anything about that, man. He's definitely going to hate him.
He got done for a hit and run on a pregnant woman years ago. And he's been busted for PEDs multiple occasions. The UFC moved an event from Las Vegas to LA because he tested positive on the week of a show. And they were just like, yeah, that's just a pulsing effect, you know, from the steads he took before. His body's just regurgitating.
Like, that's normal. They're not him or anything.
They don't give it a flying fuck, man. And the same, again, the same month. What a month for fights between John Jones and his missus and Usyk and AJ. Alexander Usyk, undisputed.
What exactly call that fight? Like, they were one-sided contest. Yeah. I mean,
unanimous all five cards. Like,
he was a heavy 1-12 favourite.
Yeah, those are the biscuit odds that you got. Yeah, Alexander Usyk, undisputed cruiserweight champion. I would say we called it on the pod.
You called it.
Nah, we talked over between ourselves, and I think it was AJ. He's got 3 of the 4 heavyweight titles. And, you know, massive occasion. I think he was at Tottenham Hotspur Arena. And you just saw Alexander Usyk just put an absolute boxing masterclass on. And I think he could have finished him at some point in that fight. And he just continued to rake left hands across him, beating him with rhythm, making him second guess. AJ with one of the more perplexing performances of his career. A lot of people expressing frustration. Why don't you just roll forward and just punch him up? Obviously, it's not that simple. It looks like they're going to have the rematch, so I'm not too sure. I don't expect it to be any different of a result, to be honest with you.
No.
And as exciting, unexpected in some quarters as that fight was, in October, we got something really special in Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder's third fight. 5 knockdowns in total. 2 against Fury, and 3 against Wilder. Fury was repeatedly saved by the bell, but ultimately he managed to ride out the storm, and Wilder got what he wanted after that second fight. He sacked his team and said, "You don't pull me out of the fight. I want to go out of my shield." And that's exactly what happened. It was the perfect end to an astonishing trilogy, and one that's going to go down in history, man. That was
for sure. Yeah, that fight was incredible. Where did you watch that one, Flynn?
I watched that one live at home. Yeah, that was, I think that was probably the best sporting event I've ever seen in my life.
What a review.
That is up there, man. Yeah, that is up there. Man, massive.
I don't want to go through all the details of the fight because, again, for time, but you don't often see two near 7-foot guys punching the fuck out of each other for half an hour and actually hurt and pushing through. It was like one of those old bare knuckle stories from the early 1900s where it was in the 50th round.
Something you've read in a book about, like, you know what I mean?
And if you'd be thinking, yeah, that probably not that intense, but this was intense. But yeah, a pleasure to watch. And in the same month, Glover Teixeira, 42 years old, UFC light heavyweight. He crushes the Polish power, Jan Blachowicz, for probably one of the biggest upsets of the year.
I was going to say, this was a huge shock. It might not quite be on Amanda Nunes levels. But still, certainly one of the biggest shocks in the UFC.
I was expecting him to get banged out, man. And he just dragged him to the ground, jiu-jitsu'd him up.
And that was a nice story as well, because I think, if I remember rightly at the time, he had a lot of immigration issues. He hadn't saw his wife for long periods of time when he was younger. And he never thought he'd quite get his chance at the title. But when it finally came around, you know, he wore his heart on his sleeve, really. Do you know what I mean? And put everything into it. And at 39 years old,
I think he's 42.
40, even older, I think. Blachowicz is an old geezer as well. Anyway, he's just beat Adesanya. Although Adesanya was stepping up from middleweight.
Yeah.
Like there was definitely it was definitely a shock for sure. And fair play to Teixeira. By November.
Okay. I'm just gonna bang out
kind
the fight.
Current, isn't it?
Yeah, the fight's quick time. Canelo wins the super middleweight undisputed championship, beating Caleb Plant over 11. George Kambosos Jr. Wins 3 of the 4 lightweight titles by beating Teofimo Lopez in an incredible fight. Both of them knocked down, high action, high pace, a lot of drama. In the UFC, Kamaru Usman defended his welterweight title for the second time against Colby Covington, another bloody affair. And at the end, not quite the same mode of news, but Chinese tennis star Peng Shui, she went missing after accusing former vice premier Zhang Goli of rape, which resulted in international uproar and a potentially cataclysmic incident, really, wasn't it? The whole world was piling in on that. And thankfully, she reappeared a few weeks later, albeit in suspicious circumstances, but at least like she didn't go like missing in a suitcase somewhere.
Now denying it. Yeah. The Chinese aren't quite at that level. They'll just like tell you to go away and we'll just like kind of like say, like, you can't say this or else kind of thing. Yeah. So,
which is good.
They got different levels.
Not good, but like it's better than her being suicided. Yeah, December now. There's Oliveira, Charles Oliveira. He defended the lightweight title that he won against Michael Chandler.
Hold on. Well, are we going to talk about how shit the cricket's how shit the Ashes have been.
Cricket's always shit, man. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
It's, but honestly, like, it's as bad can be for English cricket right now. About, three tests down there, I know.
Full of batty, man.
That's absolutely gone. I know we had a little try at the cricket last week. I had the figures in front of me right now. So but they lost three tests out of five. It's done. Australia retain the Ashes. They've basically lost every test by like an extra innings. So it's like Australia didn't even need their second attempt. But what's the best way I can describe it? I don't know. They basically just didn't need their second 11 wickets, man. They won by an innings and 40 runs in the last test. They won by 9 wickets in the first test, which is basically nearly an innings. And they won by 275 runs, which again is basically an innings in the second test. So absolute domination. England will come back licking their wounds. And that's kind of it for English cricket.
Should pour out a little liquor for Joe Root and the boys. Definitely.
Yeah, we'll go
light a candle for the lads.
Yeah. Are England able to pull it back at this point?
Nah, the best they can do is win the last two tests and it'd be 3-2, but they're still not going to win the Ashes. So they're not going to win that little urn that I've got, the remnants, the Ashes of the Bales or whatever they are. Yeah.
Imagine if that was the real Holy Grail, the Ashes.
Never know, man.
Yeah, won't rule anything out, mate.
I don't know what they were doing in the 1800s, mate.
That'd be the perfect way, hiding in plain sight. But yeah, December, quick time. Charles Oliveira defends his lightweight title in a absolute slobber knocker against Dustin Poirier.
Slobber knocker.
He's just like, oh my God! Oh my God! And the same card, Juliana Pena shocks the fighting world with her second round finish of Amanda Nunes for the female bantamweight title. Incredible.
That was a shocker.
Yeah. But the UFC, what a product. What a forum for sporting upsets. Absolutely amazing. And the final one of the year, which is the F1 controversy between Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton during the last lap of the last race of the season, in which they were neck to neck the whole way. Controversy all the way through. Suspicious circumstances. Another racial aspect to the argument. He had it all, man. And one of the few times that F1 jumps to the forefront of the sporting world.
And Flynn reckons Michael Massey should win our sports lizard of the year. Don't you?
The man had a tough chance to make, and he made a baller's choice and gave us all an exciting match. I think he's a legend.
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, for me, who've not invested in the sport at all, I would fall on the same side of the fence, especially since he was doing other things of that nature earlier in the season that no one talked about because it wasn't such a dramatic moment. But this is one of those times where I don't think race had anything to do with it. Like Lewis Hamilton has been dominating the scene for the better part of a decade. Now, you tell me, what, he's only just now being held back after he becomes joint top winner of all F1 titles next to Michael Schumacher, the prototypical white German figurehead of the sport. I'm not having it, man. Not at all. Not at all.
Oh, wait until he's had one more straight whiskey, man. There's going to be more of this chat. Right, let's quickly reel off the Ball Chat Sports Awards for 2021.
Yep.
Football game of the year, hard not to be the Euro 2020 final, even though it's like marred by violence. So
made it better for me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
The violence made it better for everybody. Yeah.
Happy with that, Flynn?
Yeah, I don't think there's any. Maybe the Champions League final, but it wasn't exactly a great spectacle. It wasn't the best game on the field, but it was tense and it mattered a lot for the English, didn't it? So what about football of the year? I've said it's got to go for me. Even though Messi won it again, it has to be for me Jorginho, Salah or Lewandowski. And this is why. Jorginho for the rare Champions League and Euros double. Salah for basically being the best footballer on the planet at the moment. Lewandowski for his outrageous scoring form. But we've got to pick one. And you might want to add another one into the mix. But what are you saying?
We had the discussion a few weeks ago. I'm sticking with Jorginho. I think that's an immense achievement. You have to introduce a level of empiricism into this as much as you can. So I'm going for Jorginho on trophies won.
Can't argue with that, Flynn.
I'm going to go company man vibes and give it to Messi. I'm sticking with Frank.
Yeah, you've got him, Flynn.
All right, so fighter of the year. Pretty much indisputable, Flynn. What would you say? Fighter of the year.
Fight of the year. Well, it's gotta be Chisora, isn't it?
Fight your life, man. Really? After you said Fury Wilder 3 was the best moment of your life earlier.
Of course, Fury Wilder. Of course it is. Yeah.
But I'd say, yeah, definitely an honourable mention for Chisora Park. I think just because that's so fresh in the memory. But like, I do vividly remember, like, I think I always remember where I was when I watched Fury Wilder 3. I always remember being at Philadelphia Casino and like looking up and basically the only only person in the room back in Fury. And like when he was like dominating after four rounds, was it? And then I think Wilder came back in the fifth, or it might have been the fourth. The whole place erupted and I was like, no.
Oh, mate,
I was like, don't do it. But yeah, I think, and you can.
I can't say any more about this fight. It's a standing. I remember I was jumping around my living room, shouting at India, going, "I can't fucking believe it. What's going on?" Which happens a lot, really, when I'm watching.
She was just like, "Look, can you just calm down?"
No, she was captivated by it as
well.
Yeah,
she was buzzing.
She was like, "I thought Fury was going to lose then." Yeah. And again. And just, you know,
I think Jess was buzzing for that, so yeah, as well. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah.
A box of the year.
Ooh, this is a tough one for me because I'm leaning towards. Well, I'm leaning between Canelo and Josh Taylor. Canelo brings me the kind of pleasure that Pacquiao used to bring me. Astounding levels of skill, loves the big occasion. And what he's done this year, first ever super middleweight champion, 3 fights in a calendar year, and decimating people, even when he's not on top form himself. That just shows you how good he is. Josh Taylor, I think he got a 1-round knockout in January when he still had 2 belts. I mean, he beat Regis Progre 2 years before, I think, or the year before the pandemic. But we're talking about this year now. And he became the UK's first undisputed champion by beating Jose Ramirez, a fighter that people were terrified of. Got in his head in fight week. The fight begins as soon as the contracts are signed with Josh Taylor. And I absolutely love that about him. And I want to give him that award. I really do. But I think I'm torn. I think
I'd say go with Josh Taylor. So based on the circumstance that he won that as well.
Yeah.
Going into Geese's own backyard and had some, you know, sort of the scorecards were very, very lenient towards the home fight.
He was going to get fucked, didn't he? If he didn't get those knockdowns. So
I think that's a momentous achievement, man.
I think, you know, I can't argue with that at all. And it's not patriotism at all. I think a lot of Scottish people, they don't like being lumped in with the UK equally for a lot of English people. It's just a way to designate things. But I think he's a tremendous fighter and I think he's going to go on to do even more. So, I'll go with that.
And company man Flynn's going to back Canelo all the way there, aren't you?
It's got to be Fury Boxer of the Year. It has to be. He's brought thousands of new people into the sport. It's without question in my mind.
It's true. And the only reason I'd say I would disagree with you is because he had one fight against a guy he'd already beat. And that's, you know, it's not as simple as that. Because, as we've seen during the fight, how topsy-turvy, how each man could have won. The fight itself was spectacular. It's hard to give it to him on that level because it's the one fight and because he already has the win. And if he had another victory in there against like a top 10 heavyweight and bust him up, I'd be tempted to do it. But I'm leaning towards Josh Taylor. But yeah, I hadn't really thought about Fury in that category, despite a career-defining win. Yeah. I wouldn't argue with Fury.
All right, so MMA Fighter of the Year.
For me, it's between Charles Oliveira and Kamaru Usman. And with an honourable mention to Khamzat for just the way he's
himself onto the scene, really.
I don't think you can call him Fighter of the Year because of who he's been fighting so far. But
Nightmare of the Year, though, isn't it?
Nightmare of the Year. Nightmare giver of the year.
Yeah.
But I think I'd have to go with Kamaru Usman. He beat Gilbert Burns, who was ranked number 1 or 2, former teammate of his, tough. And then he beat Masvidal and Covington in rematches, which are, you know, tougher than the first fight going in. Three fights in the calendar year, all of them pretty much dominations, and making himself a serious contender for the greatest welterweight of all time in the UFC.
Hard to argue with that, Flynn.
I'd agree with that, but I'd want to give an honourable mention. Maybe this should be best MMA moment, but Juliana Pena, pretty inspirational seeing what she did. So I don't know, Fighter of the Year or just most magical moment in the octagon.
Yeah, definitely biggest shock of the year.
And we should make the distinction that this is an MMA on a whole. Like if I was, I should have renamed it to UFC fighter because there's a lot going on in one championship, less so in Bellator, etc. But they definitely need their own bit of attention that we haven't given them. So let's just say UFC fighter of the year for that one.
It's an NFL moment of the year. We call it moment of the year because obviously the game of the year is always going to be Super Bowl no matter who is involved. But obviously, NFL moment is Tom Brady winning his 7th Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. And I'll say it again, the greatest athlete of all time. At the ripe old age of 43, 43 years old, man, and he's still winning titles, winning 7 titles after being at that sporting franchise in New England under Bill Belichick's tutelage for all those years. And who would have thought he could go to Tampa Bay and do it the first time of asking? Not many people, man. So for me, that's the NFL moment of the year. And like he's the man of the year, really.
I think he's a vampire, to be honest.
I don't know what he's doing, man. But that South Park episode, man. Have you seen that? The Spice. He knows about the Spice.
The Spice Melange.
The Spice Melange.
He knows about the Spice.
There is something, man, in his genes that people need to like literally put in a bottle or something that you can do something with. Okay. Sniff or something.
Sporting shock of the year.
Oh, well, Raducanu, isn't it? Has to be Raducanu, US Open. I think she was like 400 to 1 start of the tournament. As I said earlier, she was paying £25 out of her back pocket to play local tournaments. I think she had that sort of quarterfinal defeat at Wimbledon and then entered the Open as a wild card entry and now being touted to be like the first female sports person to break a billion in sort of revenue and whatever to do the sport. And that's at 18. So, and she also became the first British woman to win a Grand Slam title since Virginia Wade in 1977.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to put a failure into this category. I'd like to celebrate someone's success. But Simone Biles and her situation at the Olympics, definitely shocking. But again, I don't follow gymnastics on that level. Maybe there were precursors to that.
Mm.
You know, so it's hard to say. But yeah, I wouldn't argue with this at all. She's a kid finishing sixth form, basically. And she's doing this on the world stage. Great achievement.
What about you, Flint? Any other sporting shocks that you can think of?
No, quite a few.
Obviously, Julianna Pena, I think that is a big one. I think you could argue that that's up there as well.
Oh, I tell you, my girl on the bike, the Austria in the Olympics, that was a pretty awesome.
Yeah, good shout.
Yeah, good shout. Good shout. Up there as well.
Fuckery of the year?
Yeah, this was quite an interesting category, really. and as soon as I seen this, I thought of Michael Massey and Hamilton, the F1. I don't know why my voice is going fucking absolute west. Like, I've only had 2 beers. Yeah, got to be Hamilton in the F1, innit?
Well, in a strictly sporting sense, yes. But in a sport-related sense, I think the Peng Shui thing pips this. Like, do you know what I mean? Just for something that happened to a sports person, fuckery is not even the word. Oh, yeah, I've just accused someone of rape. Oh, where's she gone?
Yeah,
you know where
she's
gone? Oh, what's that? World War III's coming. Oh, sweet, yeah. Astounding turn of events. But yeah, strictly sports. It'd have to go with Michael Massey in the F1, but it seemed fuckery. It weren't actually fuckery because he didn't abide by precedent, but he abided by the rules. So, bit of a grey area.
No rules were broken there.
I know there's no rules broken, but it wasn't played in the integrity of the sport, really was it?
It wasn't earnest.
Yeah, at all. And but sport has to have integrity, I think.
Yeah,
that's what we're watching.
Off his head, ain't it? Flynn. Actually, you two are both compliment. I don't think integrity should be like imperative part of sport.
He's the rule book, man. He's the rule book, man. He honestly needs anything that follows the rules.
Made a lot of money for everyone. Boom.
Should we tear jerker of the year?
I think you got this one spot on. Christian Eriksen and his collapse in the Euros. Once again, I think it's one of those moments that you remember where you were. And I think more emotionally, the legendary response from Captain Simon Kjær. And he ultimately saved his teammate's life, I think, on the field. I think quick thinking, speedy reactions, managed to get the tongue away from the air pipe, which happens a lot, I think, when there's a collapse on the field. And then consoled his wife when she was down, like witnessing the absolute horror that was going on to her husband. He was first over to her to console her and sort of like try and reassure her that everything was going to be okay. And then he also got his team up after they'd lost that game 1-0, inevitably, which you can't believe FIFA made, well, didn't make, but they basically said, like, you'll have to forfeit the match if you don't carry on. Got them up into a semi-final, got them playing some really good football. Who did they beat in 4-0 in the quarters? Absolutely smashed somebody. I think it was Russia. And then obviously went on to play England in a game which they were the better team for the first half an hour, if I remember that correctly.
Came out firing.
I think they looked really, really good. So I think I can't believe he didn't win some kind of award. They should have invented an award for him. Do you know what I mean?
That's perfect.
I think he that was an incredible moment, really.
He went above and beyond the remit of what a captain is supposed to do. He was a friend. He was fucking like an actual lifesaver. And I remember when that happened and I was thinking like, it was actually shocking. I mean, we all make jokes about things and take things like light and, you know, we're a bit irreverent at times when we talk about things, but we were all like, fuck,
this harrowing.
This really is horrible. Yeah. he's just running about, and then oh fuck, then he's just on the floor,
sort of bundled yeah, forward.
His teammates formed like a guard around him. It was horrible, and I'm so glad the geezer's like recovered to that extent. You know, anything could have happened when your brain starved of oxygen, when your cardiac condition could be sacrificed. All loads of shit could have happened, and now he's off walking, talking. You know, kicking a football about again. Probably won't ever play again. But listen, football's not everything. Sports not everything.
He's got a beautiful family.
Yeah, he's got a wife and kids. It worked out as best as it could have worked out. So I'm very, very happy for him.
And ironically, something kind of similar happened in the NFL last weekend. This probably would have been in the five things you've missed. There was a pass thrown into the end zone and it was a tight end. The tight end caught the ball and he sort of had a little bit of contact. He sort of fell onto his side and he's got into this really stiff position. Had they got off the stretch on the stretcher, he was like shaking, visibly like shaking. And he just got into this stiff. Apparently it's a condition when you from like severe trauma or something, you get put into this position. Luckily, it seems like he's come round and he's going to be okay. Whether he's going to play again, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much damage, but some people were saying that there might be damage to his spine or something like that. But it might just be result of a concussion. Hopefully, that's the case. But it was. If you haven't seen that, like, it's a really, really scary moment.
Absolutely horrible, and you know, brings to light that the cost these athletes like endure to just do something they love and you know want to make the best of themselves and their family from. But
all right, last three.
Yeah, Sporting Lizards of the Year. You've gone People's Republic of China.
We just had to throw it in there, man. I like to be honest. Saz Jess. But yeah, it's they have to be in it. That was an absolute lizard move. Definitely. It really was. Just like
genuine global conspiracy shit.
Yeah, Naughty Girl, you're not allowed to go out for 2 months and you have to watch all our videos, isn't it? All our like China is the best plant in the world videos.
We had to dance around to shit. Yeah, no arguments from me.
Finn, any lizards that you can think of this year? Any lizard moves?
I know that I can think of.
Slimy Eddie, he's like the lizard of the decade, though, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's more of like a businessman lizard. This is like fucking hailing the owl god more. Like
he's lizard more company levels, man, like, isn't he?
So, and their company man of the year.
Which you're going to rename to the Flynn man of the year.
Flynn's idol of the year. It's got to be Dana White for me. Unapologetic. Underpaying the lads, telling everyone to fuck off who asked him about it. Does not give a shit. His head is bigger than the moon.
All business, innit?
Yeah, all business. Listen, there's a level of it that I respect, but he's the epitome of a company man. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's built a strong company. You got all respect to him, man. Not underpaying, correctly investing back into the talent. That's what he's doing.
Listen to doing me. Absolutely nothing wrong here, is he? Absolutely.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's not actually doing anything wrong. It's just the way he's like, yeah, fuck you. He's like, you lot run a company like this size. He's like, telling everyone like that, look, yeah, you try have however many fighters they've got. It's like a lot. It's like a couple of hundred. And he's going, you try and balance those books. He's like, don't tell me how to pay the fighters. You run this company. Do you know what I mean? And I agree with him. I ain't got a fucking clue how to do
that. Did UFC Ringo's technically work for him then?
I think he's banging half of them, so
they technically work for him.
Technically, like, special. Sweet. And Ball Chat Shithouse of the Year.
Or Shithouses.
It's got to be Bryson DeChambeau and
Brooks Koepka. Sure, man. And they're absolute great banner for our 221. The Shithousery that they've gave each other all year, man, has been fantastic.
Whispering in each other's ears, saying he said this, he said that. And it's like playground shit at the top level of golf.
And then like making ads, like Koepka was doing like beer ads, and he was like saying like, I'll give you a crate if you go and like slander like Bryson on the course and stuff like that.
Classic. That's like,
so you
shooting
got
the shooting McGavin golf
it really was them, man. Yeah. It was shooting McGavin encapsulated. But that's it. We'll have a quick look at looking forward to 2022 Commonwealth Games in good old Brum. World Cup in Qatar, that will have a final week before Christmas, which is going to be so weird. Having a Winter World Cup. Obviously, you've got Surigao versus Francis and Ghana, which is going to be incredible.
That is going to be nuts.
That's going to be a huge start to the year for the UFC. Possible Joshua Usyk too.
Hopefully. I want to see that rematch. I want to, because I think Fury beats either of them. And I think there's a lot of intrigue in that rematch. If Joshua wins that, it's like all guns blazing. The big fight's back on. And at the moment, it's dead in the water. So, yeah.
McGregor back in the ring.
Apparently, Charles Oliveira has said, any weight you want, it doesn't have to be for the title.
Yeah. In the ring or the octagon, actually?
In the octagon.
He said, we can, very specific about that.
We can fight whenever you want. And I think Charles Oliveira if he can stay out of the way of that left hand, which I think he can. Yeah. I think he'll strangle McGregor unconscious.
He doesn't deserve that fight anyway, but that's we're coming to the end of the podcast now, so we're not going to go back down that route. You know, I'm surprisingly, and Tino's going to fucking hate this, I'm quite looking forward to Jake Paul's like trolling everybody, trolling the planet. I'm quite looking forward to like him being like the shit house of the year award for 2022, and he was probably a close one this year. But
I think it's a good shout. I didn't really think about him for the. I was more thinking about it in terms of pettiness between people, that rivalry. But I think he might get that award. You know,
probably gets it this year, innit?
Yeah, yeah.
So the stuff he was doing in the lead up to that last that rematch with Tyron Woodley, in the wake of obviously Tommy Fury not being able to be there, the stuff that he was coming out with, the t-shirts, I don't know why I'm looking there because Flynn's there, innit? And the stuff he was coming out with, and the t-shirts and saying like this could have been you, and it's like, oh, hey Tommy, sorry you couldn't be here, but watching on TV is cool too. Like, honestly, yeah, I think we should reassess that. I think maybe we give that to Jake Paul.
Yeah, I'll second that. The more I think about it, the more it makes sense. And it's in the realm of fighting as well. So,
and that is it. And hopefully we continue the shit into the new year.
Definitely. Well, we're definitely going to, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'll put a little teaser trailer out. You guys might see some conflict with another podcast of a similar name and nature.
Netflix series season 2. What's this?
Netflix. No, we'll see. We'll see. There's going to be big drama show in the next year. I think we're going to have to start trolling motherfuckers ourselves, isn't it? Just to keep something going. Fantastic year. So glad we started it. So glad we continued. And looking forward to doing more.
Sam Flynn as well. Nice one for joining the podcast and talking shit with us every week.
Thank you. Thanks for breaking up my isolation.
I was going to say, yeah, just getting between the boredom, man. The cabin fever you're probably experiencing right now.
Really helped, definitely. And you know what? Yeah, fuck them guys.
who you tend to fuck themselves now, man? You've told everyone to fuck themselves today. That's what I was at it. Who else is at it?
We won't say. We'll save it for next year, man. Go on, save it for next year.
All right, cheers for listening. I will see you with our first episode, which will probably be, if not in a week, definitely in 2 weeks. So cheers for listening.
Next time.
Cheers.